Welcome to Time and Tide, Nantucket's Maritime History Podcast. I'm your host, Evan Schwanfelder, Maritime Studies Instructor for Eagan Maritime Institute. Listen along for stories from the high seas that rise from the depths of despair to the peak of human hope and salvation. This podcast is brought to you by Eagan Maritime Institute. Through our programs and educational opportunities, we work to inspire the appreciation and preservation of Nantucket's maritime culture and seafaring legacy. Time and tide wait for no man. Episode 2, The Wreck of the Hazard. Welcome back, everybody, to the second installment of the podcast. I just want to say a huge thank you to everybody who tuned in to episode 1. The feedback was amazing, and I'm happy to announce that we are now live on the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, and Stitcher. So if you would like, please subscribe and rate on those platforms. Today, I recount one of the more mysterious wrecks that has ever occurred on Nantucket. The Bark Hazard set sail for Boston from the Delaware Breakwater on February 12, 1881. She made very good time up the coast with favorable wind and tide, but the ship encountered a gale on the eve of February 13th and struck the shoals southeast of the island on the morning of February 14th. What unfolds next is a series of highly questionable decisions made by the captain and a pretty remarkable twist at the end of the story. The source material for this podcast comes from the Eagan Maritime Library and the collection at the Shipwreck and Lifesaving Museum. It has been synthesized into narrative form. Please see the notes in the episode description for source details. The Bark Hazard was known for her speed. She was built in Boston, Massachusetts in 1849 for the East India trade and had an excellent sailing record during her 30 years of service. In 1880, under the command of Captain David Roberts, she sailed across the Atlantic to Sierra Leone on the west coast of Africa, where she was loaded with a precious cargo of hides valued at $35,000. The bark was destined for New York and Boston, but after the long journey, she anchored in the Delaware Breakwater for several days. During this respite, Captain Roberts sold an unseaworthy lifeboat and didn't replace it before continuing the trip. Allegedly, no one knows exactly why he sold the lifeboat or why he didn't immediately replace it. The bark was then left with one 14-foot lifeboat on board, which could only fit 4 of the 11 crew. On February 12, 1881, with a heavy breeze and strong tides, Captain Roberts and his crew set sail for Boston. With favorable winds and a powerful ocean tide, the speedy bark sailed at a quick pace and moved up the coast faster than anticipated. A light on the horizon was spotted on the night of February 13th, which Captain Roberts believed to be Montauk. However, it was actually Sankaty Lighthouse on the east coast of Nantucket. The Hazard was far off course. As the bark approached the dangerous shoals southeast of the island, the wind increased to a gale, forcing the Hazard to drift drastically from its course. In the early morning hours of February 14th, the Hazard struck a shoal. However, the bark was able to lift off and continue sailing, but not without significant damage to the vessel. The rudder was smashed in the collision and caused the bark to drift aimlessly in the wind. At daybreak, the bark struck the Old Man Shoal, southeast of Sconset, which completely dislodged her rudder and the ship began to flood. The Hazard was shipwrecked. The beacon of Sankaty gave hope that the crew would be seen from shore at daybreak. However, the morning light revealed that they were far from shore. With only the small lifeboat on board, the second mate, a young Norwegian man named Emil Olsen, began building a raft with the assistance of 2 other crew members. Although rudimentary in its construction and design, the floatability of the raft far outweighed other concerns, especially since the bark was sinking. Shortly after dawn, As they began to drift towards the treacherous Bass Rip, Captain Roberts, his first mate, W.H. Chase, along with two other crew members, prepared to go ashore to seek assistance. Before boarding the lifeboat, he gave no orders to his anxious, impotent crew. The helpless, abandoned crew watched their captain and fellow crew row away. At 9 o'clock in the morning, after an hour of rowing toward shore, Captain Roberts and his lifeboat crew watched as the ocean enveloped the Hazard. At the first sign that the hull was breaking, Olsen, the Norwegian who built the makeshift lifeboat, and his two helpers pushed the raft into the sea. Olsen quickly jumped aboard, followed by a sailor named Sheridan. Two crew members made a desperate leap, but the raft drifted far enough away from the boat that their attempt was unsuccessful. Thomas Brown, an English sailor, was one of the crew members that landed in the icy water. Luckily, he was hauled to the raft. Four men were still on the bark when it made its final descent. Two were seen struggling to swim and stay afloat after the boat went under. The other two were never seen after they were tossed into the ocean. All four perished in the freezing cold water the morning of February 14th, 1881. Shortly before the Hazard disappeared in the ocean, men on the shores of Nantucket spotted the vessel on Old Man Shoal. They saw no signs of life and no distress signals, and thus assumed the bark had been abandoned. The volunteer lifesavers in Sconset would have normally launched the Humane Society's surf boat, but because there was no sign of life and the winds were extremely high, they didn't risk venturing out for what appeared to be a deserted, wrecked ship. They did, however, witness the Hazard drift from Old Man Shoal to the south of Sconset to Bass Rip Shoal, which was to the east. Olsen and the men on the raft were never spotted from the shore, as the whitewater foaming around the rip obscured the onlookers' vision. At around 5 o'clock that evening, the captain's boat with the three crew members was spotted trying to make it to shore. Having difficulty maneuvering and steering the boat, landing at Tom Never's Head was difficult. Captain Winslow of the Surfside Lifesaving Station and several members of his crew arrived on the beach to help assist the exhausted men ashore. Captain Winslow invited Captain Roberts to go back to the station, but strangely, Roberts insisted to be taken to Nantucket Town, and an eyewitness spotted him carrying two bags of what appeared to be gold from the lifeboat. After having dinner in town, Captain Roberts dispelled a version of the story about the wreck. Although the exact details that he released are unknown, and at the time he didn't even know the fate of the seven crew he had abandoned on the Hazard, nor did he know about Olsen's makeshift raft. Allegedly, he shared little information other than the facts that led to the wreck. Islanders, hearing the story and worried about the crew, responded by sending the steamer Island Home out on the morning of the 15th to search for them. On the shoals, the steamer discovered the Hazard sunk in 10 fathoms of water off Bass Rip and no sign of a raft. After perusing the area and the dreaded shoals, the steamer returned to the wharf with its newfound information. All hope that the seven crew members were alive was lost. There are several strange facts surrounding the wreck of the Hazard. Other than the oddity that Captain Roberts shared little information about what happened and the potential loss of his crew, he wanted to be taken to town immediately. Additionally, he had managed to bring two bags of gold aboard the lifeboat, but didn't give commanding orders to his helpless crew before abandoning them. The two crew members that made it to shore couldn't fathom why Captain Roberts had sold the longboat and why he didn't replace it before they continued on their journey. They believed that if he had purchased another boat, all of the bark's crew would have survived. Despite these curious occurrences, the most miraculous event had yet to occur. After nearly a month since the bark had wrecked and sunk into the ocean, on March 8, 1881, the Nantucket Lightship's tender, Verbena, arrived at the wharf with two unexpected passengers, Olson and Sheridan, from the crew of the Hazard. Captain Thomas James and his lightship crew had spotted the raft at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on February 15th. A boat commanded by Mate Sansbury, who would later become the first keeper of the Muskeget life-saving station, was sent to the raft to rescue the men. Olson and Sheridan were in a precarious position. The raft was beginning to fall apart, and the surviving crew was fighting to stay above the surface. At approximately 5:30 p.m., Olson and Sheridan were aboard the Nantucket lightship. The frozen body of Brown was consigned to the sea. Once brought aboard, Olson shared his story, diplomatically disclosing details of the wreck. He shared how Captain Roberts left the bark for shore, and the desperate building and boarding of the raft. Olson didn't blame anyone for the incident. He described how he and Sheridan tried to keep Brown alive after his immersion in the icy water, and that his body was frozen to the point where he had to be tied to the raft in order to prevent him from sliding off. Olson recounted that only one man at a time could sit down on the raft, otherwise it would sink. He mentioned how the two men spotted different vessels nearing them, including the steamer Island Home, giving them feelings of hope, only to be crushed when the boats turned around. On March 8, 1881, the arrival of Olson and Sheridan on Nantucket confounded the mystery and strangeness associated with this wreck. According to an Inquirer and Mirror article published in January of 1941, quote, "The second mate said that when it became apparent the Hazard was doomed, he suggested to Captain Roberts that the bark be run ashore so all hands might have a chance for their lives. When the captain refused this suggestion, Mate Olson began to build his raft," end quote. Days after the wreck, questions about the captain's actions were numerous. Why did the captain sell the longboat? Why was he not aware of his surroundings? Why did he bring gold ashore? Why did he want to be rushed to town? What details did he share about the wreck, and why was his story different than the other survivors' accounts? Although hypotheses and speculations have been made, the true answers are, and always will be, a mystery. Katie, welcome back to episode 2.
Thanks for having me on the show again, Evan.
My pleasure. How you doing?
Doing well today. This story is another crazy tale from the sea.
Indeed.
Yeah, I had a lot of questions about this one. I'm totally confused and fascinated by the different characters involved.
Yeah.
From the captain who essentially abandoned his ship and his crew, and then these brave men that built a raft and, you know, jumped on board and tried to survive. First off, I guess I was wondering if you could tell us a little more about the timeline from when the men first boarded their makeshift raft to them being picked up by the lightship and then being brought to shore almost a month later. I was wondering if you could tell us a little more about the lightships and how the men eventually made it back to Nantucket town.
Mm-hmm. So when the wreck was going down, the captain had already abandoned the ship. As the wreck, just before the wreck is going underwater, Emil Olson and Sheridan make this raft out of spars and a boom and a hatch, according to one of the crew on the lightship, and they abandoned ship just before the Hazard disintegrated into the sea.
And what time and day was that?
That was the evening of the 14th.
The evening
of February 14th. And they would have been overnight on the raft, and they were spotted by the lightship crew about 20 hours later on the 15th.
So they were on that raft all night long.
Yeah, so sort of floating and drifting through the shoals. They would not have had a lot of control over the raft. They did see, and the story makes mention, that they saw two ships, the steamer Island Home that Nantucket had sent out when they visually spotted the wreck. And then there was another bark that was sailing around that the guys on the raft saw, but the ship didn't see them.
Imagine their disappointment to see those ships turn around, and they're on this little raft, and then you know, it was, I think you said the next afternoon that the lightship spotted them.
Which was very fortunate and fortuitous because the lightships are out on the outside of the shoals. They're anchored there, navigational beacons to mark the shoals. So it was kind of by dint of luck that they, the raft, you know, drifted close enough to the lightship and was spotted, and at which time they sent out a boat crew from the lightship to retrieve the raft. Two men survived. One man had suffered hypothermia and exposure and passed away on the raft.
Gosh, that is just so sad. And I mean, but also incredible that they were able to be saved by the lightship.
Mm-hmm.
And then tell me about the time between them getting brought on board to, I think you said it was almost a month later, they got to town. I mean, in this day and age, someone would fly out in a helicopter and rescue them.
Exactly.
And everyone would know.
Or they would have sent a radio signal.
Right.
So this is before ship-to-shore or ship-to-ship radio.
Okay.
So there was no signal sent back. The lightships had tenders that came out and resupplied them and restaffed the crew. So they would have had to wait that period for the verbena, the tender, to come out and then get the guys aboard that and send them back. So it was almost a month after the wreck. The wreck was on February 14th. They came back March 8th. So almost a month later that they came back. No one had any idea that they had survived until they miraculously arrived at the wharfs on Nantucket.
That's incredible. And think of, I mean, the families must have been so happy and, you know.
Well, yeah. They don't mention that in the story, but yeah. I'm sure the families or anyone who knew these guys sort of would have given them up for lost.
Wow. It's amazing hearing these stories and to think that people kept going out to sea knowing the risks involved.
Yeah, especially, you know, this is in the middle of the wintertime. This was the high season in the life-saving service, considered from October, November to April. The wintertime was the high season for storms and for shipwrecks, and there was still a very active coastal trade. So ships were sailing around at all times of the year. And, yeah, to be stuck out there in the middle of February would be pretty harrowing.
I would probably not be going back on a boat at that point.
I'm sure there's a few sailors who probably didn't sign on for another
trip.
Cruise after being shipwrecked out on the shoals here.
All right, so let's talk about this captain who essentially abandoned his crew. From everything I've ever heard growing up as a captain's daughter, isn't the captain the last one off the boat? And, I mean, if all hope is lost, doesn't the captain go down with the ship?
Yes. You're absolutely right. It does appear that he abandoned his crew, leaving them to fend for themselves. And as far as we know, he did not give them orders upon his departure in the lifeboat. There has been a lot of criticism surrounding that decision and many others. He could have done something different. He could have run the boat aground closer to shore where all hands could have been saved. Still a lot of questions, but there are more sides to this story after looking into it and digging on it a little bit.
What did you find out?
So he rushed to shore. He didn't necessarily disappear, actually. He filed a complaint with the U.S. Life Saving Service on February 21st, which is very quickly after the wreck, saying that the Surfside Life Station didn't respond quickly enough to the crew, that they didn't launch a boat, they didn't launch a rescue. And that they delayed the departure of the Island Home steamer to come get them. So he apparently went to shore expecting that a crew would come back out to save his men. They didn't. He got upset and filed a complaint. And some people say that the Nantucketers, because he was calling out the Nantucket life-saving crews, that the newspapers and the stories that ran up in Boston sort of sensationalized this and kind of turned it into a mystery because this guy was basically talking smack to the U.S. life-saving service on Nantucket.
That is very interesting.
Yeah.
Did you find anything else out about the gold or the lifeboat that he sold on the way home?
I did, actually. The Hazard was owned by Roberts' brother. And there's a strong possibility that he jumped on that first lifeboat and grabbed the gold to try to get all the money that was aboard the ship back to shore and back to his brother. The insurance company, too, also paid for the value of the ship. So there's that as well. And he could have called on the life-saving service to go back out and save his crew. Thus, he filed the complaint. So that might explain the gold. The other thing is the lifeboat. And there's a lot of mention in these stories about how he didn't get a new lifeboat, and maybe this was intentional. Maybe he was abandoning the crew out in the water for a reason. But it actually was not uncommon on for ships on a long voyage across the Atlantic to sell off on their very last leg. So this, in this case, from Delaware up to Boston, on their very last leg to sell off one of the boats for a profit. And because if they came back, they would have had to eat that cost. They could have made a little coin on that.
Sounds like, in retrospect, people should have kept their lifeboats until they got past Nantucket.
Still, absolutely. And I think there are still a lot of questions about what he could have done. He could have stayed on the boat, ran it close to shore. And I think there are some valid criticisms and concerns with Captain Roberts and his, you know, what he did. So all in all, mystery? I'll let you all decide. Thank you guys so much for joining me this week. Please tune in next time. To learn more about Egan Maritime's mission and how to offer your support, visit www.eganmaritime.org. And if you like what you hear, please subscribe to the show. Follow us on Instagram at Time and Tide Nantucket, and also on our website, www.timeandtidenantucket.com. Until next time, fair winds and following seas.